Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by
Natalie and Aaron met on CatholicSingles.com after they realized that they needed to find someone who shared their faith. Meet other faithful Catholics on the original Catholic dating site. Download our app today for free.
Looking for a way to build daily prayer discipline? Seen the rise in mindfulness meditation, but not sure if it is possible to meditate in a way that's consistent with your Catholic faith? Just looking for a way to breathe new life into your existing prayer routine? No matter what you're looking for, Holo is here to help. Holo is a Catholic prayer and meditation app that helps users deepen their relationship with God through audio-guided contemplative prayer sessions. From meditations on the daily gospel, to the rosary, to daily examines, Holo has something for everyone. Holo is the number one Catholic app in the U.S. It is free to download and has permanently free content, but you can also check out all of the premium sessions for 30 days, risk-free, by signing up at www.holo.app/breadbox.
Today on the Bear Wozniak Adventure, we're going to find out, is there going to be work in heaven? And if so, what is it going to be like? We have as our guest today, Dr. Michael Naughton. His new book is Getting Work Right.
Welcome to the Bear Wozniak Adventure. Kickstart that engine and roll thunder with the pack. Explore the grittiness of manly spirituality. Gain traction in the virtues. Soup up your spiritual engine by turning adversity into adventure. Now here's Bear Wozniak. Let's ride.
Aloha and welcome to the Bear Wozniak Adventure. I'm your adventure guide, Bear Wozniak. This is where we believe that the most radical thing you can do in life is to abandon yourself to the wild adventure of God's will. I'm going to let you guys in on a little secret. Most of you guys don't know this. I try to keep it a secret because I'm a CPA and I have a master's degree in tax. I hate to admit that because actually, I don't really like accountants that much myself, and then I get pigeonholed. But you know, as a CPA, I've audited when I was part of the bigger firms. I audited huge corporations, and I really got to see the nuts and bolts, the insides of corporations and how they work. And now with my own practice, I help small businesses. So I really get to see the why of business and the how of business, and looking at people, trying to help them understand as they're growing their business, when is enough enough? What is your goal? What is your exit strategy? Why are you even doing this? So I really, work to me is a really interesting subject, the whole concept of business. And we work. You know, you think about Adam and Eve in the book of Genesis. They had work to do. Before the fall, they had work to do. They had kuleana, as we say in Hawaii. Kuleana means to have it means responsibility. It means stewardship. But it's even more than that. In Hawaii, the word kuleana is almost like you own something. For example, if I'm working in a restaurant with you and it's your job to bus tables, and I think, I'm going to help you out and bus your table, you would say, bruh, that's my kuleana. You know, don't take away this is my possession. This is how part of who I am is our work. So the whole concept of Adam and Eve had the kuleana, the stewardship of the garden, to till it, to grow it, to even name the different items in there. But it was after the fall that our work became something different. It was by the sweat of the brow that we worked. And so as Catholics, we need to understand the value of work. Is it where we find our fulfillment? Is it a place we can find meaning? Is it a place that we can be gift ourselves? I think everybody goes to work, right? Everybody works. Even if you don't have a job per se, you're working in your home. It always amazes me when I go into a third world country and I go, how does this piece of fish get to my plate when I'm 20 miles inland? Or how does water get to my glass? Or how does electricity, often not working, but how does it get there? There's this economy of the world, of the world family, people giving and working, and we come together and we're productive. And, you know, the root word of the word economy is even the word for family. So it's a great study, and we have with us Dr. Michael Naughton. I'm going to read this to you so I get it right. He is the holder of the Coach Endowed Chair in Catholic studies at the University of St. Thomas, Minnesota. Shout out to all you guys at St. Thomas, where he is a full professor with an appointment in the Department of Catholic Studies. In fact, the Catholic Studies is the oldest and largest Catholic Studies program in the world. He's an author, written several books, lots of articles. And so we're so stoked, as we say here, to have Dr. Michael Naughton with us. Aloha, Michael.
Aloha, Bear. Great to be with you.
So, you know, we like to do a little background check on our guests. You know, EWTN makes us go through this process, or should we let this guy on our show or not? But I've heard that you've spent some time in jail. Is that right? Were you actually incarcerated, or tell me?
Well,
should we let you on our show? That's the question.
Yeah, well, that's a good question. You might want to talk to my wife about that one. But I grew up on the south side of Chicago in a rather difficult time. It's always a difficult time. But the 60s and 70s were both my parents from Ireland. And they were both getting rather tired of the kind of things that we were doing. And one day I was walking out the door, I was about 16. And my father, who was kind of in desperation, looked at me, says, Michael, in his Irish brogue, says, Michael, you be a good boy there, Michael. And I said, sure, Dad, whatever, as a teenager would say to his father. But he looked at me and says, but Michael, if you can't be good, you be careful. Well, an unfortunate event happened to me that night, Bear, and my father had to come down to a Chicago police station. For those of you from Chicago—
Wait a minute, an unfortunate event happened to you.
Yes.
Everybody that's ever been in jail is not guilty, right? So,
listen, Bear, we're all victims, right? We're all victims.
You're not going to tell us the event, huh? You're not going to let us know.
Well, I can get to that in a little bit. But my dad walked into the police station. He looked at me. He says, Michael, I think you better just be good, Michael. Just be good. So, yeah, unfortunately, it was one of those things, just underage drinking. And unfortunately, there were some other things, such as some drugs. Just really unfortunate events at that time of our age, which I have great repentance for. It's never something one should move into, because it always has serious implications.
It's not funny, I understand, but in our youth, you know, we do make mistakes. But I have my coffee cup of Mother Angelica here. For those who are watching on video, she's looking right at you, and I guess she said, okay, you can be on the show, you can be on Bear's show.
Thank you, Mother Angelica.
We love her so much. She's she's a little fiery person too, isn't she? Even in heaven. Okay, so I got a question for you. This new book is called Getting Work Right. The question, is there going to be work in heaven, Michael?
Yeah, it's funny, Bear. I heard you speaking about that at the beginning. I'd encourage all your listeners to read it. Called The Great Divorce, and it's about heaven and hell. And one of the interesting things about the book is particularly several characters. There's an artist, there's a businessman, and there's an academic.
Oh, no.
And all three of them, sounds like a joke, doesn't it?
An academic,
right?
Oh my gosh.
Exactly. But all three of them can't get into heaven because they don't let go of their work.
Mm.
Right? And so the move into heaven is a kind of abandoning of ourself. And the problem for a lot of us is that we have identified ourselves in terms of our achievements, and we have to let go of those. Now, like all things, and by the way, Lewis points out that this is not just in work, but it's also in motherly love, right? It's our pity, it's our ideologies, it's all these things. And the Lord is always asking us, there's something deeper in your reality that you got to let go of. Those things are really good, but they're secondary goods. They're not primary goods. And so I think in that sense, you know, work will influence how we move into heaven, but it's something that we have to let go of.
Once we're in heaven, we're not going to be just sitting in. That's a great point, though, by the way. Where's our identity? Is our identity in the Lord? I mean, like right now I see your library of books. One of the things, the saddest things about me is I know that when I'm gone, no one's really going to want to read my books. And they're just, I have all this whole library of books, and they kind of surround me like they surround you. And like, can I bring my books with me? You know, my dad is a deacon. He has a story of this guy that said, hey God, I lived a really good life. Can I maybe bring something with me? I've been really successful and I've been a good guy. And God says, oh, I'm going to make an exception. You're the first one in history I'm going to bring something into heaven. So he gets to St. Peter, and St. Peter says, "Come on in, dude. You did a great job. Come on in. You're welcome into heaven." And he's got this wheelbarrow, and he goes, "But you got to leave that there." And he goes, "Well, God said I lived a really good life. I could bring something with me, and so I brought this gold, these gold bricks with me, because it's some of the wealth that accumulated in my lifetime." And Peter says, "Well, you can bring them in, but why would you bring in pavement?" Okay. It's one of my dad's jokes. But yeah, there's a gold, the streets are paved with gold there. So
exactly.
Yeah, so we have to find our identity in something more deep. But my sense is that when I get to heaven, I'm still gonna have kuleana. I'm gonna have work, but it's gonna be of a different nature. Tell us what are your thoughts about that?
No, I think that's right. I mean, we are, you know, first of all, as Lewis points out in the book, The Great Divorce, we're moving into a world that many of us have to be careful of trying to overprescribe, because it's a world that's going to be a world that surprises us and is beyond our comprehension. But these things in the world that we're doing now are important, but they're of secondary importance, and they need to be ordered in light of heaven. And so how they'll be playing itself out is, in one sense, beyond us, but that it will be clear. I mean, when we think about the resurrection, it's a bodily resurrection. This is not a just merely spiritual reality, but it's a reality that's going to go beyond our sense of time and space. And I think we'll all be surprised when we get there.
And there's one of my favorite sayings is memento mori, you know, remember your death. The monks of the desert would say that to each other. When they would get to, they were hermits, they lived out in caves, and they would maybe get together once a week or once a month, but when they gathered for Eucharist, the only thing they would say to one another is memento mori, remember your death. It was something, though, that goes back to, you know, so they're living their life with that perspective, that you're going to die. But it goes back to back in the days of the Roman generals, when they would come into Rome after a great victory, and they'd hold a triumph for them. They would leave their armies on the other side of the Rubicon. They'd come into Rome, have a huge old party for them. But as they're walking or as they're riding along and everybody's cheering for them, there's a slave just a couple paces back saying to him, memento mori. Remember your death. Stay a little bit. All these earthly accomplishments, being a careerist, seeking honor, glory, fame, being driven for more and more success, being driven for acquisitiveness, all of that you leave behind. So what is really important? We'll be right back. We're talking with Dr. Michael Naughton. He is a full professor at St. Thomas University. Is that how we say it? Am I saying
University of St. Thomas.
But it's the University of St. Thomas. I blew it already. We'll be right back with Dr. Michael Naughton.
Hey, man. I don't want you to miss out on your free stuff at deepadventure.com. Go there and subscribe to our weekly email newsletter. You get free video content, including the Bear Wozniak radio show, video version on YouTube before it even airs on EWTN. And you can follow us on all of our social media. Go to deepadventure.com and subscribe. Plus, good stuff happens when you support us at patreon.com/BearWozniak Deep Adventure. You get instant access to every radio show, Bear Wozniak Adventure, and our TV episodes, Long Ride Home, the instant we produce them, months before they even air. Plus, we give you all kinds of free stuff, coffee cups, t-shirts, and other things like that. Go to patreon.com/BearWozniak Deep Adventure and become our patron. If you're watching on YouTube, don't forget to press the subscribe button and ring that bell.
We are here with our financial liberator, Tom Gripe, the president and CEO of Notre Dame Federal Credit Union. Tom, tell us, what's the difference between a bank and a credit union?
Well, banks serve a great purpose in society, but they are really owned and operated on behalf of the owners, which are people that own shares in the bank. So the bank does business, and their profits, which is what they exist for, is to make as much money as possible and pump that money back to the owners. Credit unions, on the other hand, are a totally different animal. We are a co-op. We are a not-for-profit. And what that means is we exist solely for the benefit of our members. So we are not here to make a ton of profit. We are here to make enough profit to sustain ourselves and then pump everything else we can back into the pockets of the people who own us, which are our members.
We've been talking with Tom Gripe. He's the CEO of Notre Dame Federal Credit Union. You can go to Notre Dame FCU.com to find out more. The Financial Liberator. Aloha, welcome back to the Bear Wozniak Adventure. Our guest today is a full professor at the University of St. Thomas. Just the fact that the university's name is St. Thomas makes me jealous. And he's actually the head of the oldest and largest Catholic studies program in the world, which probably means in the universe. We're not sure. So that's pretty cool. And he's written a book on about faith and work. He focuses on the area, and his new book is called Getting Work Right. And so are you ever going to retire, do you think, speaking of work?
Well, that's a good question, Bear. I'm getting in that place where you start to think about it, but you're still a few years away. So we'll see how it works.
I don't think I can, you know. If you're a Catholic, you're going to be serving the Lord in some way.
You might just be recreating yourself,
but I'm so jealous. Well,
by the way, yeah. the word retire, put new tires on.
Yeah, let's put new tires on and recreate ourselves and get busy serving the Lord. Yeah. I mean, I have friends that have retired, you know, and I feel bad for them. There's someone here that comes down every morning and he puts his fishing pole in the ocean in the morning and is there all day long. Just looking at the fishing pole, he's not reading or anything. And I'm like, I don't think I could do that. But yeah. Because you're in your years where this is when you know the most, you could be the most productive, you know?
Amen. So,
but I guess to each his own. But let's talk about work. Tell us the why you wrote this book, Getting Work Right, and what we can learn, the Catholic approach to work and leisure.
Yeah, that's right. I've been working on this for a long time, but the last 10 years or so, I've been giving a lot of talks. I give about 20, 25 talks a year around the country. And one of the things that's come clear to me is that my thesis of the book is that if we're going to get work right, we have to get leisure right. And what I find interesting that a lot of us want to have meaning in work. We want to have an understanding of that. But sometimes in the sense we have to look to another place, and the other place is leisure. And I find that this conversation between work and leisure catches people's experience. It's in their experience. It's not some type of abstraction from an academic coming, you know, I don't know what you're talking about. Now people start to say, there's something here. And the real interesting thing, Bear, is this question of leisure, which a lot of people find that they're dissatisfied with the way they spend their leisure time. And so in the talks that I give and the book that I talk about, I really try to key in this question of leisure.
Well, you know, the thing is Sundays can be the most depressing day of the week. There's this song by Kris Kristofferson, Sunday Morning Coming Down. He's walking along the street, hearing the sound of music in church, and he can smell someone's cooking dinner. But he's not part of that. He says, he's, what am I doing with, Sundays can be a bad day. But, you know, in Hawaii, people come there to recreate. And I call it recreate. And when people come out there, I'll bump into them or they'll come on purpose to be out there while I'm there. And I'll put them on a mission of recreation. One of the things I do is I'll set them in motion, having an adventure, getting outside the box, doing something different than they would normally do, whether it's going out and surfing or getting on a catamaran or scuba diving or sitting on I always end it with having them sit on the edge of a cliff like Diamond Head or the edge of the ocean, a point out in the ocean, and just contemplate God and life from there, because you learn a lot about life from the edge.
Well, it's interesting. You raised two really important dimensions of leisure.
I did.
The first one, there you go.
Yeah.
The first one is Sunday. And it's interesting, there is a Hungarian psychologist who coined the term Sunday neurosis. You know, why is it that often the people will have this experience on Sunday of a kind of angst, a dis-ease, a low-grade depression, a kind of lack of meaninglessness? And there's lots of reasons for it. But one reason is, I mean, some people think because they have to go back to work on Monday, which can have some truth to it.
Yeah.
But for most of it, they don't know how to rest. And thus, they try to rest and they get themselves in knots. And they have this experience in sense of it's a restlessness.
Mm.
So when they try to rest, they don't rest. And they, you know, it's Augustine's line in the Confessions, our hearts are restless until they rest in you, O Lord, right? So right. We have to get that. So in order for us to get work right, we have to get leisure right. In order for us to get Monday right, we have to get Sunday right.
Well, you know, I remember once this happened to me. I was working for a New York bank, and they said, dude, you got to move to New York from California. I said, I'm not going to do that. And they said, well, here's your 10-week silver streamer. And I took that 10 weeks before I launched my CPA firm, my little firm. And I sat at the beach, and I read the New Testament and the Old Testament and the New Testament all within that about a six-week period of time. The big thing that stood out to me was, one, my people don't listen. The second one was rest. It's called the land of rest. You know, that we don't... Yeah. What is rest? Paul said, strive to enter into what? What are we going to work really hard at? Resting. Strive to enter into God's rest. And I finally came up with the thought, R-E is recognize and S-T is trust. If you recognize who God is and who you are, and you learn to trust in God, you can come to a point of rest.
No, that's right. And of course, to rest comes from the Latin word Sabbath, right? So Sabbath means to rest. But it also means, and this is why sometimes you have to be careful, there's a lot of people getting into this question of, you know, the rest and contemplation, but it tends to have a kind of a new age, highly therapeutic kind of version of it. The rest has to lead into the question of Sabbath or to celebrate. And that's where the Eucharistic dimension is, that we affirm that the world is good, not because you and I think it, not because we somehow contribute to it, but it's been made that way.
Amen.
And thus, the rest leads to this idea of creation, that we need to receive what God has given to us. That gets at the heart of what we mean by rest, which is a little different than the way often the culture will look at it.
Well, you know, as an athlete, you know, I don't know if you know, I'm a world champion tandem surfer. As an athlete, I know rest is really critical.
Yeah,
I know I need to get my hours of sleep in, but I think of resting. I know there's a. I think in the Greek, the word to wait means to mend a net. It's also a time of preparation. It's the time of resting is to lean into God, and say what's next. You know, what are you saying to me, Lord? It's the time of the cool of the day, as we say in Hawaii, pauhana, finished work. When God used to come and walk in the garden with Adam, that's what resting is listening and leaning into the Lord. It's that image of the woman leaning on Jesus. I think it's in the book Hinds Feet in High Places, walking and learning to rest.
No, that's a great point, Bear, because one of the things you're getting at is that there's a rhythm of life. Mm. So we talk about work and rest, but the other rhythm is this idea of receiving and giving. Mm. You know, Pope Benedict, we speak about charity as the highest of all virtues, and even speaks about charity as at the core of what Catholic social thought is. But he defines charity in a very beautiful way. He says, charity is a love that is received and given.
Mm.
So in order for me to know how to work well, to give my life to others, what I first have to understand that I have to receive God's grace, to receive God's sacrament, receive God's word. And when that really seeps into me, then I know how to work. Then I know how to give it myself. Then I know how to love my wife, love my kids. And so a lot of us think, you know, let's just go out and give. Let's go out and just love. And there's something good about that. But usually what happens is we exhaust ourselves. Let me give you an example of this. When I work really hard. I get early in the morning. I do a lot of writing. I do all the things, you know. I have five kids. I all those types of things. But what happens to me is that when I really work really hard and I only work,
yeah,
something happens in here. I start to say, well, why am I working harder than everybody else? You know, why am I putting in 60%, but my wife is only putting in 40? By the way, Bear, I only think that. I don't say that.
Yeah,
right?
And you
but
know it's
all
not
that
true.
Stuff yeah, starts right. to create a kind of resentment, a certain kind of cynicism, a certain kind of victimization. And it's getting at that principle is that I'm just working. I'm just giving, and that's causing a disorder, which is why this wonderful Latin phrase, Nemo dat quod non habet. You cannot give what you do not have. And it's precisely why you have to stop, you have to receive, but not some kind of airy-fairy thing, We've been given a revelation, and that revelation is a gift for us, and we have to create the conditions for that to come to us.
You know, it's also like, as a surfer, dropping into a big wave, like my son Jeremiah surfed 85-foot waves. But surfing Waimea, which is at least a 25-foot wave, if it doesn't break unless it's that big, you could drop in and accelerate so fast that you outrun the wave. And right. Now you're in the shoulder, and you're slowing down, and then the wave is building towards you. It's gonna just destroy you. So we learn a surfer to do the cutback. We drop in, maybe have a powerful bottom turn, but then we cut back. We always go back to the vortex of the wave, and we find our and we trim our board, and we let the wave carry us. And that's why a man who says, I got to get right to work, I don't have time to pray in the morning, is fooling himself. The most productive hour of your day is that hour of prayer before you start your workday. That is what gives you, you know, while you're praying, you know, later on in the day, you realize, oh, now I know why I read that in the Liturgy of the Hours. It's God's time of giving you a meaning in life. We're going to talk more with Dr. Michael Naughton about his book, Getting Work Right. We're going to talk about meaning in work when we get back. This is the Bear Wozniak Adventure.
Hey, man, I don't want you to miss out on your free stuff at deepadventure.com. Go there and subscribe to our weekly email newsletter. You get free video content, including the Bear Wozniak radio show, video version on YouTube before it even airs on EWTN. And you can follow us on all of our social media. Go to deepadventure.com and subscribe. Get your free stuff. And if you're watching on YouTube, don't forget to press the subscribe button and ring that little bell. Don't miss out.
Aloha and welcome back to the Bear Wozniak Adventure. I want to invite the men out there. You know, so men are really lonely. I mean, we'll sit in a bar and watch a UFC fight or something, and we'll talk about everything but the fact that our wife is leaving us or we're having a problem with our children or we've got some medical issues. We just don't open up to each other, and that's why we created Bear's Man Cave. It's a secret Facebook group, and I hesitate to say that because when I say it's a secret Facebook group, people go to Facebook to try to join. You can't join there. It's a secret. You might find our group, but you can't join there. You have to go to deepadventure.com, and you'll find a warning sign that says, danger, do not enter. And that's basically your invite to become part of the cave. And we have men there that a lot of them are leaders in their own, have become leaders of the men's movement in their churches or in their area. But they come to the man cave to receive encouragement, to be challenged, to be educated, to be mobilized. And so we invite you to come and become a part of the man cave, not just to receive, but to give there. And we pray for each other there too. And about every, two or three weeks or maybe a month, depending on what's going on, we have a Zoom video chat meetup where all the men get together and we actually talk to each other face to face. So you men out there that right now you feel isolated, you know, the I believe of the Apostles' Creed is great. But if you're out there as a Lone Ranger and you don't have the we believe of the Nicene Creed, you're going to get picked off. So come and join the man cave. We're talking today with at deepadventure.com. We're talking today with Dr. Michael Naughton, who I really have gotten to enjoy because we had some real technical difficulties getting the show done, and his perseverance and the joy and the making me not feel so bad is really tells me who he is as a man. So we're talking about Getting Work Right, his newest book. He is the full professor at University of St. Thomas in the Twin Cities. Getting Work Right. This is something I want to ask you about. A lot of people saying, well, I there's this funny commercial out now where this person is, a waitress comes up and the person asks them, so what do you do? I said, what are you doing? Oh, I'm going to college. What are you studying? Oh, I'm studying art. Oh, well, that's wonderful. Have you thought about what you're going to do for a living? You know, and it's it's kind of like there's this fallacy, I think, to some degree right now in the world where you have to find your fulfilling career that somehow, I don't know how to say this exactly. There's a difference between finding meaning in work, in giving and working hard and providing for your family and finding meaning in any kind of work vis-a-vis, I got to find something that fulfills me. You know what I'm trying to get at there?
Yeah, no, absolutely. Another way of putting it, Bear, would be that every road that we go on has two ditches, right? And so we don't have just one ditch. We often have two. And often the one we're trying to avoid, we're running into the other one.
Oh, my gosh.
But when it comes to work, your first point is well taken. A lot of us try to get more out of work than work can give. Mm. And we often see work as a career, and thus our whole identity is found in terms of what we've achieved. We become resume people, you know? Mm. So, hey, what do you do? And then it offers an opportunity for you to tell them what you do and what your achievements are and what your position is. And we're thinking that somehow that's going to give all the meaning of our life if we just get higher in the categories of work and achievements and accomplishments and whatever it might be, right? So that's our one ditch. The other ditch is that we, in a sense, undervalue work. We see work as simply a paycheck. Mm. And the only thing I'm trying to get out of work is a paycheck, is money. And thus we see it as a job. Mm. And in Minneapolis here, there's a diner called Al's Diner. And in the kitchen, it's in Dinkytown in Minneapolis. And in the kitchen, there's a sign that says, "There's no fulfillment here."
Oh, I love it.
Right? And now, you know, it's kind of funny and things of that sort. But the fact is, what happens for a lot, and by the way, a lot of us Catholics, Christians, we go into work and we, you know, it's just a paycheck. My real meaning's out there. But like, God's there. God's in your work.
Yes.
He's in the relationships. He's in the pain. He's in the suffering that should be redemptive. He's in the difficulties, right? Let him in. He's there. And so both of those ditches kind of can derail how we look at our work.
You know, I'll tell you what, that's interesting. It's that Catholic perspective of the both end or being in the center there. But, you know, I tell you what, in Hawaii, there's this restaurant called Duke's. It's kind of like after I surf, I used to stop in there a lot, and I would drink a half a beer, and I would sit at this area called the Wall of Shame. It's where the locals stand and watch everybody else have fun at Duke's. But when people come up, talk to me there, they're going to say, "Well, what do you do?"
Yeah.
And I say, "Oh, you know, a little this and a little that." I never really tell people what I do unless they really dig. We don't do that in Hawaii. We don't ask people what their work is. We right. ask them about their life. It's very, very almost kind of abrasive if someone asks me what my job is. In the ocean, we're just all surfers. There may be a famous person here, or a lawyer here, or someone who has a labor job here, but we're just, you know, we need to find our identity in someplace other than just our work. Where should our identity be?
Yeah, it's very interesting you say that, because, you know, I've spent some time in Africa. It's the same place though, you know? That's not the first question. For us in America, it's the first question, you know? It's because we're really focused on these ideas of achievements, and that's really where our identity, but you're exactly right. In other cultures, that is not the first thing that they, now, it doesn't mean that Hawaii and Africa doesn't have problems. We know they do,
right?
There's other, but it's not, it's a little different, and it's important to know that, which then helps us to question our own culture.
Well, the culture in Hawaii, there's still a real tribal unity among the men. There's a real community there. And so the identity is in, like, what high school did you go to? What's your last name? Who's your family? It's more that, where are you from? It's more that than what do you do? It's the ohana part, the family part.
Yeah, it's a great insight. And it's a reminder, particularly for us as Americans, who are on the mainland, who really particularly, and those of us who are educated and those of us who are moving into careers where that becomes our downfall.
Yeah, we call it the pain land, by the way.
The what?
The pain land.
The pain land.
So, but tell us more about then this sense of finding meaning. You know, there's so many kids out there going to college, getting $100,000 in debt, and then they work at Starbucks, you know, for the rest of their life, and they're trying to find fulfillment. How do you actually find, you can find meaning in your work. How do you find that?
Yeah, I think, you know, the church uses not the word job, not the word vocate or career, but it uses the idea of calling or vocation.
Mm.
And if we think about this, I know there's a lot of talk on it, but think about it in three calls, right? The first call is that we're called to be human beings. And we as human beings are at our best when we're given of ourselves.
Mm.
And so there's something about, and this I think is a universal dimension. It's not that we're not at our best when we're in the quid pro quo, right? We're all calculating. We're trying to figure, well, if I give this, what am I going to get? That's always going to be a dangerous thing. So it's a universal call to love, the universal call to holiness that Lumen Gentium speaks about in Vatican II. The second call is to call to a state of life. And as Catholics, we speak about it in terms of the priestly, religious, and the lay vocation, right? And so who do we belong to? And for most of us, we are in the lay vocation. And for many of us, we're in vocation of marriage. By the way, a colleague of mine once said to me, he said, you know, my wife only has one husband. You know, my children only have one dad. There's a kind of primacy to that vocation that can never be sacrificed to work. And yet, on the other hand, we're also called to work. And work is a really important way that we give of ourselves. So the question is, the meaning comes about is, what gifts do I have? What talents do I have? What interests do I have? And a lot of us have to kind of have a deeper kind of discernment of that versus the idea that, you know, I just simply want to make a lot of money. You know, everyone knows that's going to lead to bankruptcy. But what are the gifts that I have? And that's so what do people think my gifts are? That's why your parents, your friends, what do they think? Listen to them, talk to them. And I think all of that kind of discernment starts to help people understand, well, what type of meaningful work do I want to move into? So I think it's what Benedict speaks about in terms of the logic of gift versus the logic of the market. And so we have to get into that logic of, what are my gifts? And that's where I think meaning comes about.
Yeah, you know, it's like some people think, well, you should really work on your weaknesses. Maybe in some ways that's so. But find what your strengths are. And you may find, if you make room for your gifts and pursue your giftedness, like my sons who work with me on this production, they've pursued their gifts and then it's made a way for them to make a living. But if you find your gifts and make way for those, and you may have gifts, but what if you never develop them? You have to take the time to do that too.
Well, I love your point, Bear. You gotta lean in, as you were talking about before, leaning in. God's giving you some gifts. Don't waste them.
Amen.
And these are your strengths. And begin to understand them.
Okay.
Let's be mindful of our weaknesses, things of that sort. But let's not forget what God has given us.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of a hint of God's will for your life if he gave you those strengths.
Amen.
We're talking with Dr. Michael Naughton. He is the full professor at the University of St. Thomas in the Twin Cities. And he's also the head of the oldest and largest Catholic studies program in the whole entire multiverse. There could be a multiverse. We'll be right back with more of the Bear Wozniak Adventure.
Good stuff happens when you support us at patreon.com/Bear Wozniak Deep Adventure. You get instant access to every radio show, Bear Wozniak Adventure, and our TV episodes, Long Ride Home, the instant we produce them, months before they even air. Plus, we give you all kinds of free stuff, coffee cups, t-shirts, and other things like that. Go to patreon.com/Bear Wozniak Deep Adventure and become our patron. If you're watching on YouTube, don't forget to press the subscribe button and ring that bell.
Aloha and welcome back to the Bear Wozniak Adventure. Here at Deep Adventure Ministries, we believe that the most radical thing you can do in life is abandon yourself to the wild adventure of God's will. God is wild. When you go out into nature, what do they call it? They call it the wilderness. If you abandon yourself to God's will, get ready for the ride of your life. We're not saying it's going to be easy, but it'll be simpler. Following God is much simpler than trying to be clever and trying to find your the way to make life, kind of finding all of life hacks and making life work for you. Seeking God's will and abandoning yourself to God's will and saying, God, shut this door, open that door, let your perfect will be done in my life, opens you up to the great adventure. I had someone say to me once, I'm really torn because I see you out riding motorcycles and surfing, and I have this great zest for adventure, but I also feel like I have this obligation to my family. And I'm going, dude, what could be the greatest adventure in the world but to birth into this world an eternal being who you have kuleana, stewardship over, and guide them into their own eternity? So that's the great adventure, is abandoning ourselves to God's will. And part of that is learning what is our vocation, what is our calling in life in terms of our work. So we have Dr. Michael Naughton with us, full professor at University of Steubenville. Dr. Michael Naughton, thanks for joining us again.
My pleasure.
What is it that you just gritting right now that you want to say to people about work that I haven't brought up yet? Your book, Getting Work Right.
Right. Well, I think we did talk about that question of leisure. I think it's really critical. Maybe another way of thinking about it is, you know, a lot of us sometimes don't know the good that we're doing. And we assume it. Kind of like you were just talking about the idea of parenting. A lot of us who get into the muck of parenting, changing diapers, of, you know, cleaning up houses, and we're like, oh gosh, the day-to-day grind, you know. But there is great nobility in the idea of parenting, and we sometimes lose sight of that when we're in the muck of it. And I would say the same thing is true for business and people in organizational life, whatever it might be. You know, one of the things I'm the board chair of a manufacturing company. I was actually just on an all-day meeting yesterday, and we make, at one point we were really big, you know, your laptop, when you open it up, there's a hinge in there, but we make hinges.
That's so cool.
Right. And you know, it's interesting. The founder of the company, wonderful man, Bob Walstead, once said to me, he says, you know, I wish, instead of making hinges, I wish we made like pacemakers where we save lives. Well, you know, that's a really good, noble thought. But, you know, it's kind of like the parent who says, you know what, I wish I was going over to Africa and working in poverty or something like that. Well, that's a good thing, too. But you can't create an economy just based on pacemakers. You need hinges, you know, you need bolts, you need screws, you need carpet, you need wood, you need lumber. There's all sorts of things. And so while some of us are going to find ourselves in these kind of very beautiful things of saving lives, there's a whole infrastructure that's really necessary to make that happen. And there's a vocation there. Pope Francis speaks about business as a noble vocation. But let's be clear that we want to be careful of this kind of naive idealism. You know, about what that is. And thus, there's nobility in the ordinary. We talk about ordinary time. We're in ordinary time right now. Ordinary is not bad. Ordinary is really, really good.
Right? For those of you who aren't Catholic, that's a certain time of the year where it's kind of an ordinary time. It's not Advent or Lent or something like that.
Right.
I like what
you said. So I guess I would say that would be one point I just want to bring up to people. Don't think of this as kind of, you know, I have to change my life. It's actually trying to see God. God's at work, and a lot of times we have a hard time seeing God at work.
Okay, let's talk about this for a second, because you brought up the fact that you're on the board of a business. I remember going to college, I learned that the purpose of a business was to make money for the stockholders, that was the primary purpose for business. How would you define the purpose of it?
You know, it's interesting. You're exactly right. So I taught in the business school for 20 years in our finance department. You know, the first principle of finance is to maximize shareholder wealth, right? But here, one of the things, let's take a step back on this one for a second. So you're telling me that when I go into this institution, I have one goal. Right? It's to maximize shareholder wealth. Well, we're doing this to all sorts of institutions, right? We look at the university. What's a university? Well, it's to basically give people career credentials so they can make as much money as they want. What have we done to marriage? We've reduced it to simply sentiment of people's emotional, you know, dimensions. And so we've lost sight of the goods of marriage. So one of the problems that we're living in is that we're living in a world that has thinned out institutions, and we're reducing our institutions to one good, whether it's a monetary good or it's emotive good.
It's also very utilitarian.
Exactly. And so business is one, but we're doing that to education. We're doing that to marriage. We're doing that to all sorts of our institutions, and we're creating institutional poverty. Listen, if business is simply about making money, it's a culturally, spiritually impoverished place.
And I think Pope Leo did talk about that in Reverum Novarum, that we're not just all cogs in a machine. Okay, so what's the Catholic, what would be the Catholic approach to business?
You know, this is not an easy one, but maybe let's talk about it on two levels. What I would say is that the purpose of business on one level is to provide three goods: good goods, good work, good wealth, right? I just mentioned about the good goods, right? it takes a lot of goods that we have to produce, goods and services that we have to get out for a society to function, right? But we want to be careful. There are some bad goods out there, like pornography, you know, like violent video games, like all sorts of other things. So we want to be mindful there's some really bad goods, but that's one good. The second good is we want to create good work. And thus, one of the other things that we need to be mindful is that when people come into our workplace, they have gifts, they have talents. And if we created the conditions to develop that, we were just talking about this at the board meeting yesterday about what's our training and development program that we have. How are we developing our people? So that idea of good work is critical. And the third good is good wealth. Listen, if you don't make a profit, you die, right? Mm-hmm. A company has to make a profit, right? Profit is not a bad word. But here's the thing about profit. It is a great servant, but it is a lousy master, right? Wonderful. And then the other thing you have to do is you have to create wealth, and then you have to distribute wealth justly. Mm-hmm. And so those three goods, that's the purpose of business.
It's so interesting.
Doing those three goods.
And that's so interesting because the word good is right in the midst of it. You know, and Jesus said, hey, only God is good. And he said, the earth is good, man is good. You know, he talked about when he created. But as a CPA, I know there's this cost of goods sold, that key equation.
There you go.
Gross
we
profit.
We talked about that yesterday.
Yeah, so goods. It's a good thing to be productive and to be making good things. So in that context now of a more of a Catholic approach to business, what about decision-making? The concept of subsidiarity within our political structure, we talk about that. What about within the context of a business? Is it a top-down business? Or how do we find that, stay between the two ditches? Or what do we do there?
That's beautiful. Well, you know, again, I talk about that in the book. I talk about subsidiarity, particularly as it relates to the question of good work, because Benedict in Caritas in Veritate has this great definition of subsidiarity. He says, subsidiarity is that when I look at you, I see that you have gifts to be given, right? And thus, I don't create an organization where I, where your manager, micromanage everything.
Right.
I also don't create an organization where I say, oh, I'm going to empower you to do what you want. And then, of course, you crash and burn because you don't have the talents for it.
And you crash and burn the business, too, in the process.
Exactly. So subsidiarity has two things you want to be mindful of. It's gift recognition. I see gifts in you, but it's also gift coordination. I have to coordinate those gifts with others to create the goods of the business that we have at a profit, right? So I think that's how subsidiarity starts thinking. When you start thinking about it that way, right, it has both a sense, I want to have you have gifts to be successful, but it has to be in the context of the success of the business, because you're not just simply a lone ranger.
How refreshing to have this conversation. You know, we spend more, good part of our waking day working, but we don't really have conversations at this level about it. We're talking with Dr. Michael Naughton, full professor at University of St. Thomas in the Twin Cities. I got to get you together with my brother-in-law out there and my sister there. He owns a very successful business, and Robert Archambault is his name. Next time in the Twin Cities, hopefully come by and maybe visit the university. We're talking with Dr. Michael Naughton. His new book is called Getting Work Right. And where can people find you? Where's the best place if they want to reach out to you?
Well, you can get it on Amazon. It's also Emmaus Road Press, their website. But you just throw it into a search and it will come right up for you.
Yeah, it's a great book. I have it on my reading stack. I started reading it and then I had to go on a business trip, and now it eventually got buried. So I've got about halfway through it. So I got to finish it. Dr. Michael Naughton, thank you for spending time on the Bear Wozniak Adventure. Hopefully we can have you back again.
Well, Bear, it's been a real pleasure. God bless you now.
This is the Bear Wozniak Adventure. Until next time, may the breath of the Holy Spirit aloha you. Aloha.
You've been listening to the Bear Wozniak Adventure. Go to bearwozniak.com to get your free audio and other exciting content. Plus, you can pick up the Long Ride Home 10-episode DVD set, autographed copies of Bear's books, Long Ride Home shirts, tanks, coffee cups, and even motorcycle pins and patches. and find out how guys can sign up for Bear's Man Cave online Facebook group, all at bearwoznick.com.
I feel silly trying to make up prayers myself. My mind starts to wander as I'm speaking to God. I just don't have time to pray. Do you recognize yourself in any of these statements? If so, we have a book for you. In Pray Fully, best-selling authors Michelle Fanley and Emily Jaminet share the rewards and frustrations of their own prayer journeys to create a practical guide that combines testimonies, tips, and journaling space to help you spend quality time with God. Whether you want to learn how to pray aloud in a group or stop your mind from wandering during prayer, Fanley and Jaminet have practical advice and the real-life experience to help you overcome obstacles to everyday prayer. Head over to AveMariaPress.com and use code LEARN2PRAY, that's LEARN, the number 2, PRAY, to get 20% off your copy today. Looking for exceptional coffee delivered fresh to your door? We have the answer. Our friends at Grim Bean Coffee produce small batch artisan coffee using top tier coffee beans. The coffee is roasted when you order, guaranteeing the freshest coffee possible. Check out Breadbox Roasts, a new line of Catholic themed coffees available at www.grimbeancoffee.com/breadboxmedia. Experience coffee like never before.